Well, good evening and oh, very well, warm welcome. I hope it's a much warmer day today. We're certainly seeing some improvements in the weather. Gosh, well, this evening I've got a really fantastic guest for you who brings a really inspiring message of hope. And hope for those people I really believe who need to hear that message of hope, possibly most of all right now. Because the Action on Addiction charity says that it has seen an 86% rise in the numbers of people seeking help with addiction in January this year compared with January last year. So the families of those with substance abuse issues have even spoken out about the immense pressure and danger that the lockdown has put on their lives. Obviously, things are now moving forward and we're coming back out, but that kind of carnage that's been caused, the side effects of that are still being very, very much felt. And with support groups being limited to just 15 people, many charities have actually been unable to hold supportive sessions safely in person. Some supportive groups are still operating for people with substance use disorders because many have been able to transition online. The Adfam charity has been solely relying with online and telephone support. Practitioners like myself know that using technology is fantastic and super, and it's been, been amazing for us to use technology. But very sadly and inevitably, it leaves many people out, quite often those who, don't have access to broadband, don't have access to technology, are those people who are in most need. People who spend their money on drugs and alcohol don't tend to have a lot of money to spend on laptops and computers and telephones and internet. So it makes communication, which, is the foundation of support, really, really difficult. So we're in challenging times. We're in, waters. We don't know where we're going, deep waters, and we don't know where we're going. And this week on the Wednesday Wellbeing Show, we want to talk a bit more about that, but we want to give you a message of hope as well. And I'm chatting with CC Reagan, I knew I was going to get it wrong, Reagan this week, who brings her wonderful story of healing, of transformation, and hope. CC is a recovering addict herself. She is a real survivor. She's survived domestic abuse, and she's also an incredible woman, helps people in all different ways, but she's also a published author. She now is working with fellow survivors of addiction, abuse, and trauma to really unearth their inner strength and heal through the power of writing. Her followers and members of her community refer to her as inspiring, and she really is. And the main goal, for her really is to simply share her story, to share the story that, if you are listening to this show tonight, you are not alone. If you have got a family member who is struggling, you are not alone. CC, welcome to the Wednesday Wellbeing Show. It's lovely to have such a sparkly, shiny, inspiring person on the show.
Oh, thank you. You're so sweet. I don't even know like what I can say to follow up that incredible introduction. I feel like that was enough and I should just go now.
That's it, we're all
Yeah,
done. Look, you are inspiring and you do have a lot of support that you offer. But let's go back in time to the how long have you been living free of drug and alcohol misuse behaviors?
I celebrated 5 years of consecutive sobriety on January 1st of this year.
Massive, massive congratulations. 5 years for me this year as well. Yeah. March the 31st was my sobriety birthday.
Amazing. Happy birthday.
5 years is huge. Happy birthday to you too. I'm like Joe with my partner and say I'm the queen now. I've got two birthdays. But for me, it was really important to celebrate years in sobriety. It's a huge accomplishment. So massive congratulations to you. 5 years ago, not that long, and what a transformation you've had in your life. Can I ask you to share a little bit about, you know, what it was like before you got sober, before you got clean, before you chose to make that change? What was life like for you?
Lonely. It was a lot of fear. I think I was just afraid of everything. I mean, practically, it was very much like I didn't necessarily have a lot of like friends or support. I was like pretty isolated in general from family and friends, especially near the end. And part of that was due to the like abusive relationship that I was in, and the isolation that occurs when you're with somebody who literally separates you from the people who love you. But a lot of it was from, you know, over a decade in active addiction, and people just sort of drop off. I lost jobs. My health was really, really bad. I ended up like moving down to Carolina and living with my grandparents and working in a car dealership down there. I tried to get sober for like a year, and I just found it really difficult. Just found it like almost impossible to do that. Near the end, it was like I was drinking so much. I mostly like drank alcohol. That was sort of my like thing. And I would drink a lot, like, you know, like a liter of whiskey a night. And I was like waking up in the morning and like taking shots and stuff because I had the shakes, like the withdrawals were so, so bad. And near the end, you know, like it was just, I just felt sad and embarrassed. You wake up so much and you feel like ashamed and like maybe you don't know what you did the night before. You have to check and make sure that you still have your phone and your bag and whatever, and like check through your messages and who did you text and who did you call and what did you say, and just like the constant struggle of that, and then not knowing how to deal with those feelings, so then just drinking to cope with them, and so the cycle continues. It's pretty much what it was like.
Just absolutely crazy. I mean, did you have a terrible traumatic childhood? Did things go very wrong? Were you horrifically abused? What was it that drove you, do you think, to pick up your first drink?
Well, I knew exactly what I was doing. I mean, sort of the answer is yes. like I didn't have a really great growing up. Like, my mom was wonderful. She passed away almost 11 years ago when I was 19. I love her so much, and she was wonderful. But she stayed with my dad for a really long time. They were married for 19, almost 20 years, and he was an alcoholic and had been abused by his dad. And he sort of repeated the cycle with me and my sister. He was really he was financially abusive to my mom. He was emotionally abusive to all of us. And there was some other type of abuse with me that I don't really talk about too much because it's like, you know, it's a family thing. But yeah, there was a lot of that going on. And then he did like a 12-step program to try and get sober, but he would like go to meetings and then he'd come back drunk with a 30-day chip or something, and it was just like, you know, I mean, I was like, this is silly. And then a whole bunch of stuff happened all at once when I was like 14. So my parents had gotten like finally officially gotten divorced, and my mom had started dating someone. And that was sort of really weird because she had been married for such a long time. So that was strange. And I'm 14. It's always like, you know, life is crap when you're 14 anyways. And then my uncle, who was I was really, really close with, passed away very suddenly. He was like my dad to me. Where my dad failed, he sort of flew. And I loved him so, so much. And he was really, really young. He was in his 30s and he died. And it was insane. Like, we just got the call and I was like, oh my God. And then like very shortly after that, my dad attempted suicide. And he was found like in his hotel room where he was staying, and taken to the hospital. And I visited him in the hospital. And my mom had been like struggling with some health issues as well, like in her hands and stuff, and they thought that she had carpal tunnel, and then they thought she had MS, and then it turned out that she had ALS, what's known as motor neuron disease over here, Lou Gehrig's disease in some places, which is terminal, and usually people pass away within 2 to 5 years. So she got diagnosed with that, and this all happened, I mean, within like a month. And then she, wow. Yeah. And then she like got engaged to that man. They decided they wanted to be together anyways. And then like shortly after that, she fell pregnant with a surprise baby, who is like here and lovely. And she's 13 now, which is crazy. And she lives like with her dad. She's my half sister, back in the States. Yeah, and all of that sort of happened very much back to back, and I knew, like, I was quite familiar with addiction and alcoholism as a coping strategy, because that's what was emulated to me by my dad, and I figured, you know, not unironically, that it worked for him, so I would just do that. So the first time that I ever drank, I mean, I tasted alcohol before, like I'd accidentally drank his drink or something like that.
Yeah.
So I tasted alcohol before, but the first time I actually drank, I was like gonna get wasted. That was the point. So I was like 14 years old, went to my friend's house, her parents were out of town, we had a party, and I got wasted, and I knew exactly what I was doing, and that's what I wanted to do, and then I just continued to do that for a long time.
So you'd learn through childhood experiences and through watching and observing the people around you that when things don't go well in your life, when there's pain, when there's trauma, when things are stressful or difficult, that alcohol is a great pain reliever. And so you followed that pattern and engaged with that activity. And then obviously, you know, for some people they can drink, and that, you know, they can even drink for pain relief, and then they can, you know, get a hangover and they think, I'm never going to do that again, and they might not do it again for several months or even several years. What was it, do you think, that was about alcohol and you? What was the relationship that you had with alcohol, do you think, that kept you going back to it?
The thing is like I learned to lie about things, about how I felt, and to project this sort of I'm fine, everything's fine sort of persona to everybody. And I learned that from kind of trying to look like on the outside, like we're keeping up with the Joneses to cover up what was going on with my dad. So my mom would lie, you know, to people, like white lies or whatever, I suppose, at like family functions and things like that, and say like, oh, he's just like not feeling well, or he's just had a really hard work week, or he's in work today, when in reality he was like so drunk the night before that he like couldn't physically move and the whole house would stink, you know. That's what I learned to do. I learned, okay, so you just figure out, you cope with the thing however you do, and then you just lie about it.
Interesting that you say that you tell everyone that you're fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine. Yeah. We're fine. Uh-huh. I like the word fine. I think when I think about the way I'm going to swear now, so if you're a child, clove your ears. But, when I think of the word fine, I always think that means you're fucked up. you're irrational. You're in a narcissistic relationship, or you're feeling neurotic and you're emotional. So, you know, for me, when people go, I'm fine, that it means that they're not fine at all.
Yeah.
And I think that really resonates with your story of how, you know, out on the outside, you dress well, you look well, you've got good hair, you've got good clothes, you can have that appearance in public as if everything is okay. Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes, you know, there's all sorts of craziness going on at home. And like you're saying, your dad is at home, he's not well because he's recovering from a binge of alcohol, on alcohol, as a result of some challenging times that he's had in his life.
Yeah, it was very much like pretend to be fine or whatever. And it did look, you know, like we all went to church and it was like, you know, my mom is so beautiful, and it was like his two blonde daughters and everything, and we lived in like a really nice suburb and he's a financial advisor, you know. It was very like picture perfect on the outside. But that sort of got me into the habit of denying what was actually going on or how I actually felt in order to project this sort of like persona of everything's fine. I learned how to do that as a child. So I just was like, this is what we do. You know, when you're a kid, you don't know any different. And then from everything that happened, I had a post-traumatic stress disorder, which then after my 7-year abusive relationship became complex PTSD, which is fun. I'm a very complicated person. So I also drank to cope with that. It was like, I didn't know how to explain how I was feeling. I didn't even think that was a thing that people did, because we didn't do it. So drinking was a coping strategy that I knew existed, so I just did that. Lying was what people did, I thought, so I just did that. And then, you know, rinse and repeat. The more trauma happened to me, the more I didn't know how to cope with it, the more I drank, because that was all there was.
I think your situation is possibly a very extreme one because of the amount of trauma that you experienced. But the whole idea of you know, appearing that everything is, you know, that appear everything is fine appearance. Mm-hmm. So many people do that, don't they? They, you know, they become experts at, you know, life appearing wonderful. You only have to look on social media and you think everybody's got the most amazing life. And like you say, but behind the scenes, that's you know, quite often, you know, we're not taught, are we? We're not taught how to express our authentic selves. We're not really allowed. I think it's a very British thing, isn't it? Stiff upper lip.
Yeah.
You know, we're not allowed to, everything's fine. We just get on with things. Mm. We're always fine. We pick ourselves up, we dust ourselves off, we get on with it. We don't whinge, we just get on with it.
Yeah, make a cup of tea and...
We'll have a cup of tea and it'll all be fine.
Exactly.
I actually do believe that we'll have a cup of tea and it'll all be fine. I think a cup of tea does solve many, many issues.
I do agree. After 3.5 years in this country, I do agree.
It's a good cup of tea. It does solve many, many issues. Mm. But the reality is that when we've been told, or we've been taught not to express ourselves, when we need to, we don't know how. We don't even often know what it is we are feeling. I work with many children who know when they feel good and know when they feel bad, but they can't tell me anything more than that because they don't even have the vocabulary to explain how to feel. So we're in the situation where, in addition to having that kind of an upbringing and learning how to behave like that, which, you know, basically all of us have some elements of that, I'm sure, you've now also experienced, you know, a great deal of loss and trauma as well. How the heck do you go from all of that pain and anguish and chaos? How the hell do you get to a point where you think something needs to change, I need to do something, or, you know, what happened?
I would say it was sort of like a slow and steady realization over time of like wanting to do something about it, like, or at least recognizing that there was an issue. Like I said, I did try to get sober for like a year. So I guess I first realized that I had a problem. I mean, people close to me were telling me that. And I also had left, I had finally escaped my abusive relationship. I almost lost my life, and I was able to leave finally, and it was very traumatic and whatever, but that changed my drinking a little bit, and then because I was free and could just sort of do whatever I wanted. But then that change sort of created other issues where now it wasn't just go to work and then come home and drink with, you know, my ex and all his friends and whatever. Then it was I could go to the bar, and I was online dating, and obviously that had its own specific set of problems when you can't control yourself with your drinking. And you know, I dabbled
in dangerous. I mean, let's face it, just even recently over this past year, there's been a lot in the press about, you know, about women just in the street. It's not safe. It's not a safe world we live in. If you're not able to judge safe situations because you're, you know, drunk, you're out of control on alcohol or drugs, how are you meant to negotiate who you speak to, who you hang out with, where you go, and how do you keep yourself safe?
Yeah, and I mean, I was assaulted several times during that time, but you sort of I didn't even realize it. I was never consent wasn't talked about the way that it is now, in that mm-hmm. you have to be of right mind, and anything that's not a resounding yes is a no. And you know, it was all very victim blamey, victim shamey. You see it now with how, you know, the Free Britney stuff and how the media treated her, and how they sort of treat people now. And it's it's a different thing, even just, you know, just a handful of years later. I never knew that was a thing. My sex ed didn't include consent, and it was just very sort of heteronormative, whatever, this is the thing, this is how babies are made. So I didn't know even that that stuff had happened to me, but I knew that I felt really ashamed. I carried a lot of shame in myself about that. I was not performing as well at work as I know that I could. I felt I was slipping. I would be late to things, or I said, it got to the point where I was drinking in the morning. So I'd get up in the morning and drink and then pass back out. And I woke up one time and one of the people that I worked with was banging on the door of my house because they couldn't get a hold of me, and it'd been hours and they wanted to make sure that I was okay. But I was just passed out drunk in the morning. You know, and I was I don't really want, I don't really want this to continue happening. I know I'm not this person. And I went to a 12-step meeting. That was what my dad did. That's what I knew existed.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And I went, you know, I would get a couple of days sober, and then I drink again. And then I think one time I got 90 days sober, and I went and I got my chip, and I was so proud. And then I called my friend, and we got out, and I got we went out and I got drunk to celebrate 90 days of sobriety. It was that sort of
I've not drank for 90 days, let's go get drunk and celebrate.
Yeah. And the thing was, it makes no sense, but when I look back on it now, the thing was is that I was trying to say to myself that I'm never going to do this again. and I was like 23 or 24 or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, I just didn't feel like I could close the door on that part of my life. And if you've like been watching like the Demi Lovato stuff, I think where she is like in a very similar place to that. I recognize a lot of the stuff that she says. She's like California sober or whatever, which moderation doesn't work. but you know, you just sometimes you have to go through that sort of thing and figure out like, actually, I can't, period. But to say never was too much of a thing. It was way too much of a thing. And then I finally got it in my head that, like, you know, they say just for today and they say all this like super annoying stuff. But I was like, you know, maybe like just for this minute, and actually saying to myself, like, I'm okay, well, tonight I'm not going to drink, but like if I want to tomorrow night, I can go out. And literally just being in that sort of headspace and giving myself the room to change my mind if I wanted to. And then I just never changed my mind for 5 years.
Amazing. Well, for me, it was like a reflection on looking at my drinking behavior in the past. Even when I was a teenager and I was kind of just being kind of adventurous and drinking all sorts of horrible, nasty things that you do when you're a teenager and you know, want all the sweet, sugary ones because alcohol doesn't really taste very nice when you first start drinking. Yeah. I never just had a drink and socialized. I always drank to get drunk. At school discos, I drank to get drunk. At parties, I drank to get drunk. I could never understand people who went to a pub and ordered a glass of wine, had a few sips, left it on the table like half finished. It's like, what are you doing? Wasting.
Yeah, it's such a waste. I was the kind of person, I'd be like, that's alcohol abuse.
Definitely alcohol abuse. I couldn't understand people who, it just wasn't how I did it. You know, when I went out with my friends, we all went out to get drunk. We went out to party. Even, you know, and if I went out early doors, I used to call it early doors, which was like a 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock visit to the pub straight from work with my colleagues, I'd always be there going, stay, everybody stay. Let's have more.
Yeah.
And I just thought everybody drank like that. But what I realized was actually people only drank like that when they were with me. I was the party instigator. Mm. And, you know, the amount of people I got into trouble because husbands or wives or partners should have been home.
Yeah.
You should have been home. Where were you? I was out with Amanda. Oh, no. Well, you know.
Yeah.
So I never had that kind of relationship with alcohol where I could just have a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. So for me, I looked at it a bit like alcohol's just not good for me. You know, I'm an all or nothing kind of a person. So, you know, it's not for me. I've got a really good friend who can't eat strawberries. Because when they eat strawberries, it causes them to have like a really nasty allergic reaction. Quite often they have to go to hospital. Mm-hmm. When I used to drink, I couldn't stop. And I would drink to the point where I was sick and ill. So, you know, just in the same way that they can't have strawberries, I can't have alcohol. And that's kind of what my thinking on it was. It's okay for some people. It's not okay for me. It's just not for me. There's loads of things that are just not for me. And I don't think anything of it. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. But like you, if I'd have at the very beginning said, this is it forever. Mm. There's no way I would have done that because it was that little rebellious voice in my head going, nah. Yeah. Not going to happen.
Do whatever I want. You can't
not
tell
gonna
me anything.
Happen. Yeah, exactly. Not going to happen. So I like the idea of just doing it 1 minute at a time, just for the next few minutes, I'm not going to have a drink. Just for the next hour, I'm not going to have a drink. Just for the next couple of days, I'm not going to have a drink. I think where I made a mistake was I could have really done with a medical detox.
Yeah, me too.
Because I was really very poorly and I didn't have a medical detox. Did you go for a medical detox? No.
No, I should have done. I was really, really, really unwell. I didn't understand that was like a thing. I, you know, like heroin withdrawals can kill you and alcohol withdrawals can kill you. Like, it's a very similar process that happens in your body. And I didn't realize that. And I was so like chemically dependent. You know, I had like the shakes and the whole deal. It was really, really not good. And pretty much every time I tried to quit drinking, I would just do it on my own. I never had a detox. Like, I never went into a rehab or anything like that. I just didn't know. I didn't know that it could kill me. Thankfully it didn't, but it was really, yeah, it was rough. I should have done, but I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't either. It was, I didn't get good advice, mm-hmm. From people who, you know, the advice was just stop. I didn't get advice, as you know, like, so if you are listening to this show and you do, you know, if you are drinking a lot, do see your doctor, get a medical detox, don't do what we did, doing it by yourself. You don't actually need to do it by yourself. You can do it with medical supervision. I'm sure it's a lot nicer than going through days and days and days of shaking and quaking and just being so violently ill, that you know, you are risking your life. So do reach out and get that help and get the medical detox. Yes. And then kind of sort of, you know, step forward. What's it like? What's life like now? That's what I want to know. You went through all of that. You put down the booze. You took away your pain relief. How have you managed to live life without your pain reliever, without the substances? What have you done to really deeply heal?
I had to address the problem, because the alcohol was just a symptom of the problem. It wasn't actually the problem. I had to learn what it was. And that required a lot of really, really, really difficult and challenging and emotional soul searching. I've like been through, I couldn't even tell you how many rounds of therapy in my life. I think in sobriety, maybe 3 or 4. Just like CBT, which sometimes can make things worse for me in the moment before it sort of makes things better. But I think that's just because there was so much there, so much sort of buried stuff that I had to look through and say, you know, just look it in the eye and say, this is the thing that happened to me. What am I going to do about it? And really understand like what had happened. Like I said before, I was assaulted and I didn't even recognize it as assault because I just blamed myself. Same thing, a lot of that in my abusive relationship. I didn't necessarily see all the abuse that was happening, and I had to come to terms with what had actually gone on, especially like the sexual abuse element that had happened throughout my life. I had to sort of look back and realize like, hey, these men that I trusted, that I thought loved me, actually just used me for almost my entire life. You know, that was really hard to come to terms with. Mourning my mom, I never like mourned her because I was in active addiction when she died, and the way that she passed away, like she was in a hospital bed for 2 years. It was awful to watch. I cried myself to sleep every single night, but I didn't know like how to cope. How to cope with the pain of that. I had to mourn her. I had to mourn my uncle. I had to shut the door on the relationship with my dad. I haven't spoken to him in years and years and years now. And like, you know, it's sad, but it just is the way that it is. You know, I had to really sort of deep dive into my life, understand my part in things, and then understand what wasn't my part in things. Ask for forgiveness where I thought that I should, and where like it wouldn't make things worse, and then work on trying to forgive myself.
The hardest job of all is to forgive yourself, isn't it? It's interesting that you say that, because my understanding is when you're numbing things out, when you're using substances, be it alcohol, chocolate, sugar, whatever it is, cocaine, marijuana, when you're using a substance to block out pain, you're not processing the pain. So when you have a great deal of loss, when you have a great deal of pain, you don't process that. You need some time for your brain and your mind to adjust, to have acceptance of the loss and to sort of go through that cycle of healing. And when you're using substances, you don't process, you can't process. You're stuck in that moment and you can't move forward.
Yeah.
So you had a heck of a lot to kind of heal from and process on.
Yeah.
CBT was really helpful and different approaches to therapy, different therapeutic interventions that really helped you to heal. And what's life like now?
Well, now I have all these coping strategies and I can deal with things. I journaled a lot to try and understand what was going on with me and how I felt about things. And I would in between therapy and seeing different therapists or in between different appointments or whatever, trying to learn how to, I feel like this, like you were talking about with little kids and they don't have the vocabulary in sobriety. Yeah. I didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't know if this, whatever that I was feeling, is it excitement? Is it anxiety? Is it nervousness? Am I happy? I don't know what this feeling is. I just have this thing in my body and I don't know what the name for it is. So I did a lot of writing for self-exploration to figure things out about myself. And now, where that took a lot of work before, it still takes some work now, I suppose. I have to sort of, go introspective and, okay, what's happening, Cece? But that's my first reaction now. So whereas it used to be my first reaction was grab the thing that will immediately make me feel better, now my first reaction is sit in the feeling and figure it out. And that was kind of a hard thing to figure out how to do, but now I can do that. So I actually know how I feel. I can trust myself to make decisions now, which is crazy. I never had any trust in myself before and that felt awful, especially with how people had taken advantage of that and how I had been abused, because I just relied on other people because I felt like I couldn't rely on myself. And I feel like people can sense that. Certain people can sense that and take advantage. So yeah, being able to trust myself, and also I just love myself now, which is such a basic, almost silly thing, but I never had any compassion for myself before because I just lied and then used my thing to cope and then blamed myself for everything else internally, even if I didn't express that outwardly. And now I know what my part is in things, and I have worked a lot on that and worked a lot on being compassionate for myself and looking back on that person, childhood me and teenage me and early 20s me was in all these terrible situations, and just say that Cece was doing the best that she could. And now I can have compassion for myself now in that same way. And if I'm having a bad day or I have chronic pain, if I'm having a chronic pain flare up, or if I'm having a particularly bad day where my PTSD is extra spicy, I like to say, extra spicy day, then I can just be kind to myself and say, well, clearly I need a little bit of time today and that's all right. I have a little puppy now who just turned 2. I celebrated 4 years of marriage in April. I live in a totally different country and I have a much closer relationship with my family now. It's incredible and insane.
Absolutely amazing. I think when you can free yourself from all of that pain, when you can unburden yourself, when you can find real solutions and move powerfully forward, I honestly think that the lying, the manipulation, the way that you have to kind of drag yourself out of bed on a morning with a horrific hangover and kind of get on things, I think all of that makes you hugely resilient. When you get rid of the substance, you've got all of these skills. Yeah. and it's amazing how awesome you can be when you've got a clear head and when your body's not full of horrible toxins and destructive substances, and when your head is not full of rubbish and nasty words for yourself, and when you can forgive yourself and have that self-love and that compassion for yourself, you can be hugely effective in your life. And I know that you have used writing a lot to really do a lot of that inner searching and to really connect you to your emotions and to guide yourself towards forgiveness and compassion for yourself. How has writing been really helpful for you, and what kind of writing have you been doing?
Well, it gave me a tool, it gave me a place to like express myself and like a place to download my thoughts, because once I write something down, then it's out of my head and I don't have to do the whole like spiral thing and think of it over and over and over. Like I've written it down now and it's gone. It literally is like downloading it out of my head onto a piece of paper. So in that aspect, it's
a
been
a brain dump.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just gonna dump it all onto a piece of paper.
Yes. So, and like mind mapping and stuff like that. There's all sorts of different like techniques where you just sort of put all your feelings down onto a piece of paper and then you miraculously feel so much better. Well, there's been like scientific studies and stuff done about how writing about things that happen in your life improve your health, even like physical health. Like antibodies in AIDS patients and healing times and like all kinds of stuff. I just find the science about it really fascinating. But I, because of the whole not knowing how to express myself thing, and because of the whole lying thing, and because of the whole drinking when I was 14 and my brain being a little bit sort of like emotionally stunted in that space until I learned how to put names onto things, it was really great for me to have an outlet that I knew was mine, that wasn't for anybody else, that I wouldn't be sharing with anybody else, that I could just be honest and explore what was actually going on with me. And I did a lot of, I really like poetry. I did a lot of writing poetry when I was a teenager. I was a typical emo kid who wrote sad poetry and listened to My Chemical Romance. In a lot of ways, I still am that kid. I love My Chemical Romance, and I still write a lot of poetry. But that was really helpful for me because it was a way to, and I say this to people all the time. I say this to like people in my community. It's like turn your pain into art. If you can go through a terrible thing and then you can make it something beautiful, then maybe in some way it was worth it. You know what I mean? In some like a small way. You can make it worth it. And I think the poetry gave me that outlet where I could just be honest and be dark and sort of be whatever I wanted to be. And I don't know, even get a little bit grandiose and a little bit creative. It was like, it provided me so many different, it was like one outlet, but it did so many different things that sort of scratched a lot of itches. And that's the like the book that I published last year is a poetry anthology called Wasted, and it's a collection of poems that I wrote during active addiction and when I was trying to get sober and then in recovery, and it's all just like very raw and very honest, and that's how I always wrote. It's almost like I taught myself how to express myself by writing things down.
Amazing. How do people get a copy of that if they want to check it out?
You can go, there's a link to it on my website. If you just go to ccreagan.com, then you can find it there, or you can just search on Amazon. I'm gonna curse now because it's part of the title. It's called Wasted, a Fucking Genius Poetry Collection is the name of it.
Love it. Check it out if you're interested.
Yeah.
So tell me, obviously one of the main things that you did for yourself was to turn your pain into art and express yourself that way and start to understand the emotions and the feelings that you were experiencing. But tell me a little bit about the work that you do now and the tools that you're sort of drawing upon.
Yeah, so I love this. I made the thing that I wish existed when I was trying to figure all this stuff out. So I created the Right to Heal community, and it's like Right to Heal, like writing, but it's like you have the right to heal. So it's like a fun little fun that I get a lot of joy out of. thank you. So it's a community of other survivors of addiction, abuse, and trauma to come together and heal. And it's just like, if you are a human person, then you can sit with us. And I have like, I have guest experts in there about all sorts of different things. So I have like nutrition stuff. I have sober coaches. I have subliminal self-love audios. I have all sorts of different things in there from people who are experts in their field. And then I run monthly mini workshops about all sorts of things. So we just did one last week that was all about boundaries, and I made like a little worksheet and a mind map, and then we'll go through it together next week on the next call. We have like a group where we all chat to each other, and I have like writing prompts, and we do like, we'll do a week-long haiku challenge where we all have to like write a haiku about something that happened to us that day for like, you know, 5 or 7 days or whatever. And it's like, and it's amazing how just those little bits of like being mindful about what you're going through, because you know you have to write something about it, even if it is just like, you know, 17 syllables about whatever thing has happened, how it can sort of change your perspective, because it can, it sort of makes you see things almost from the outside of yourself. It gives you the gift of perspective and objectivity, sort of look at things another way. And it can help you see like the goodness in difficult situations. And it's just cool, man. It's just a really cool group of people, and I love it so much. It's like, it's just been the most amazing, incredible, rewarding thing that I've ever done.
Amazing. And where is this community, and how can we join?
Yeah, so same website, ccreagan.com, make it really easy. There's a little tab on the top that says Right to Heal, and it tells you all about the things. I've got like free resources for people as well, and I run a free Facebook group. All the links to that are on there, and then you can join my like actual community if you want to, but I just want to help people, so I have all the things. All the things, go check it out if you want to.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. Your story is one of, you know, it's fascinating. I mean, you had a really tough time growing up. You know, you've watched both your parents and experienced losing both your parents in quite unusual, traumatic ways. You've traveled the world. You've experienced addiction as a result of the pain and trauma of just things that life threw at you.
Yeah.
And you've really come out of the other end, but you've not only come out of the other end, you know, clean and sober, you've come out happy and healthy in a loving relationship with beautiful friends and family. Now you've got this amazing community where you are encouraging people to get in tune, reconnect with themselves in a deeper level, and providing them a safe space so that they can, you know, get to know who they are and, you know, be their authentic self and find a space for themselves to heal. What's next? What's next on your journey? Have you got exciting plans for your future?
I just want to continue to build this community, really. I just want to help more people, and I'm probably gonna, I might do another book this year. That's sort of in the back of my head that I'd like to come out with another book. I am like working on my novel in the background as well, which is sort of like autobiographical, but in like a sort of really interesting way. But I feel like when you're sort of, when you find your thing and you're on the right path, then you just find your people, like things just sort of happen how they're supposed to happen. Like, you know what I mean? It's almost like you become a magnet for all the things. And not that I'm, you know, I suppose I'm like a little bit woo. I'm not super woo, but I just know from experience that like since I've felt this sort of alignment with what I'm doing, I've had so many more opportunities to help people, like from doing podcasts like this and like people reading my book and meeting so many cool people through like the workshops I do and through my community. And like, I don't really have any specific plans, I suppose. I just want to keep doing what I'm doing and then just see what happens, because I'm just enjoying the ride.
Amazing. What an incredible ride it has been, and what an absolutely joyful ride it's going to continue to be now that you are free from addiction. Now, I know that as well as the work that you do supporting people to kind of step away from substances and addictive kind of behaviors, you also do some kind of financial work as well. Tell us a really brief little bit about that work that you do, because one of the things that I recognize, you know, when you've come from a background of sort of substance abuse, when you kind of hit reality, like orientating yourself through the financial world is quite a challenge. Yeah. So I know that you bring this kind of into the work that you do as well.
Yeah, so I my first business that I started is estate planning. So I help people with like wills, trusts, and lasting power of attorney and things. So I, like a lot of people, you know, kind of like you were saying, you feel like anxiety around things and you're like, you know, what would happen to my kids or what would happen to my family or my business or whatever. So I help people to kind of like find that peace of mind by putting like the legal protection and stuff in place. And I started that because of what we went through with my mom and how difficult it was, like emotionally, but also the financial implications, because we didn't have anything planned for. So now I help people with that, and I now mentor other estate planners to grow their own successful estate planning businesses, so then they can help more people too and try to pay it forward in that way.
Amazing. So important, isn't it, to plan for our loved ones as well. And such great compassionate work that you do. That's so very, very practical. You are amazing. You are a powerful businesswoman and you have such a big heart, a huge amount of compassion, just holding space for people who need that place to go and find ways to heal, ways and tools to heal. So just tell us again how people can find you.
Yeah, if you just want to go to my website, ccireagan.com, ccireagan.com. All my stuff's there, all my socials and free stuff and community and all of it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming back, coming on the Wednesday Wellbeing Show and just sharing like the reality of recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, there is hope. You know, when things get really, really bad and people say, oh, they've had it, there's no hope there. There is hope. There's a huge amount of light at the end of the tunnel. You just need to take that first step and ask for help. And if you are listening to this show and you want to reach out, do get in touch with either of us. Yes. Myself or Cece. We are here to help, and we can certainly guide you to people and connect you with a wealth of spaces and places and people who can also give you lots of help, advice, support and therapy as well. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your amazing story. You are inspirational. You really are inspirational. You are incredible, and I feel really honored to have had you on the show tonight.
Well, thank you so much. You're so sweet. And honestly, like, it was just an honor to be asked. I love to be here. Can't believe it was like a year since the last time I was on.
I know. It's flown by, hasn't it? Well, it's great. Come back anytime.
Okay,
it's
I will.
Lovely to have you on. And it just leaves me to wish you, wherever you're listening across the globe, an absolutely wonderful, magical week of well-being. Bye for now.